You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Around the NFL podcast is also 60% G.
That's right. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. I'm Greg Rosenthal. Alongside me here in a virtual room, not quite filled with heroes, is Mark Sessler. I'm still in Japan. You're back in LA. We're making this happen, Mark.
Yeah, you know, this show has been a little bit different than others, I'd say, right out of the gate, because we're starting a little bit later. Because what time is it there?
It is 7:30 in the morning. Just had to kick my daughter Ellis out of our shared bedroom for the vacation.
Trip. I like that.
In-law's house.
Yeah, we try to typically, like, we don't over plan shows days in advance. It's kind of like in these 6 or 7 hours before you start, you bunch of texting. And so I realized, you know, I had some pressing questions for Greg, and I realized, like, wait a minute, it's like 2:12 a.m. and I'm probably blowing up his phone. And like, we never really communicated until about 10 minutes before kickoff here.
We did some plans. We got a nice show here, considering. I think actually the fact we had to plan a little bit, you're right. I think it's a 16-hour difference, which is very confusing. I'm all the way into Friday morning. You're Thursday afternoon. But we're pretty chunky here. We got news. Some news. We haven't done a show in, I think, 10 days, something crazy. I was on the last show. It was a while ago, a week and a half ago. Longest we're quiet all year. And yet, there isn't that much news. We've got Jordan Rodrigue, who's coming in from The Athletic very shortly, who's going to talk about her great series, Play Callers. Great podcast series, but she's going to stick around for our QB rankings. So this is a big show. Like the two QB index writers of the last 2 years have come together and we've combined and made a QB rankings. And then Jordan will just like tell us where we're wrong.
Just tear it apart, I hope.
Yeah, she's cruel. Let's just bring her in instead of just talking about her. We've had her on many times before. She famously told us, and we all agreed that Allen Robinson was going to have a monster year last year. You shouldn't have brought that up right before the show. But she also did a great job in some Monday Night Football recaps. And more importantly, you just did a bang-up job on this podcast series about the Kyle Shanahan coaching tree, which you can check out on all your podcast distributors, the Play Callers. Welcome, Jordan.
Guys, thank you so much for having me. It's great to see you guys in our respective virtual rooms here. I think Mark and I are kind of winning here, Greg, but respect, you know.
Oh, okay. I see you. Yeah. It looks like I'm in a prison cell or something like that. If you want to check us out on YouTube, you don't really need to.
It's a little Spartan looking.
I was going to say asylum maybe, but.
Well, no. On the other side of the room, it's all filled up. We got pictures, we got things, but yeah, it's a little Spartan here in Japan. I'm wrapping up 3+ weeks here and I'll be back. We've got our NFL Summit next week. We've got right back to regular shows pretty soon. But should we just jump into the news right away? I don't know.
First and 15. Good block by Gesicki, but they get rough on him. That's a busted ball picked up by Quinnen Williams, the big man to the five.
I mean, you can tell it's 7:30 in the morning with that transition into the news. I'm coming out slow. Quinnen Williams did not finish last season slow. 4 years, $94 million on his extension, according to our guy, the Pellraiser, Tom Pelissero. He gets an extension. I'm glad this happened because virtually no news happened over the last week and a half. We picked the perfect time to go quiet. We've been around, Mark. But the Jets get an important piece of business done before training camp.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people expected this to happen before camp. You know, there was a little bit of friction there after Jeffrey Simmons signed, and there was just like, will the Jets do this? But this was one of the most dominant defensive players of the year a season ago. And I think one thing that I thought about with him was that the year before, in Robert Saleh's defense, he had come off a foot injury and barely had any offseason. And so players talked about last training camp, like, Quinnen Williams just looks different. He feels different, and you could feel something in the works. And that's exactly what happened. And, you know, it was midseason when Baldy, our guy Baldy, basically said, this is the most terror-wreaking player in the league right now. And Jordan, you know, when you have a dominant defensive tackle, it can change everything.
Yes, I am familiar with the concept of a total star defensive tackle. But yeah, one thing that's really cool is this always seemed like not only that it would happen. I mean, of course, you get through contract negotiations and things come out in the news and then they, you know, there's quietness and sometimes you think, oh, could this actually happen? But with Robert Saleh, especially the way that he uses Quinnen Williams and the impact that he has as an interior defender, especially within that scheme where you have to be able to do multiple things. You have to be able to play more than just single gap assignments, especially for what they're now doing with the coverages behind this front and that front seven. It's just a no-brainer to me. And it's always been a no-brainer. And like, I hearken back to how endearing Quinnen Williams kind of seems too. Mm. I mean, he's terrifying, but he seems a little, you know, remember the sneeze and the bless you, thank you. You know, that was such a wonderful moment and where I think he just like locked into the hearts and minds of many, even outside of the fan base. And it's just, to me, it's just a rock star move. And having an interior defender like that, especially, you know, with what makes quarterbacks the most uncomfortable these days, I think it's absolutely crucial.
He was so awesome last year. And I think he gets, I almost not confuse him in my mind, but there's a lot of similarities between him and Leonard Williams taking about the same spot in the draft. Both of them were like, hey, this may actually be the best player in the draft if you take out the quarterbacks or, you know, whatever. And similar-ish career trajectories where maybe didn't start quite as fast as you wanted, then had a big season, and the Jets let Leonard Williams go. I think Quinnen Williams is an even better player. It's basically the exact same contract that Jeffrey Simmons got. We haven't seen all the details, but it looks almost identical in terms of the guarantees, the money. It's great. I love that, Jordan, this is one of the biggest weeks of your career. I'm not overstating that, right? I mean, you dropped this major thing.
It's got to be.
You've got to be frazzled. You've done a lot of media stuff. And then we're just throwing you into, and we're like, no, we're not going to talk about your show and just have a quick segment on that and have you on for that. We're going to drop you into like 75 minutes of deep defensive tackle with the Jets talk.
Yeah, but this is great, though. Actually, there is a tie because I did interview Robert Saleh for this play caller series. And, you know, so the way that he talked about his scheme and the way that his scheme has changed, specifically what they started doing in San Francisco from 2019 onward. And then now with the Jets, you see him. And I know we're talking about D linemen, but like you see him, he's playing more quarters, actual quarters, not just disguised cover three, but like actual quarters than he has played or deployed for his entire coaching career. And when you do that, the responsibilities of the defensive linemen, particularly some of those interior guys, changes. The onus shifts on them to be able to do more things and disrupt in more types of ways. And again, that's why I think this is part of why this is so crucial. It's a home run signing to me. And I think he's just a special, special player.
And, right. And we'll get into your project after the news. But for Jets fans, you interview a host of individuals and you really get to know them. And Robert Saleh, I just came out so excited about who he is and how the arc of his career. And just, I don't know, I think like it's a good project, changes how you feel about people. And I think Jets fans would have a lot to learn about their head coach.
Well, it's interesting. So Salah's going to get the 1-2 punch. First play callers, that's the big deal. And then after that, Hard Knocks. Like the country is going to get to know Robert Salah. Well, it's a big summer for Salah. Hard Knocks will
summer
be following.
Summer of Salah. Ooh, yes. Kind of like that. Summer of Salah.
So like, it's going to be it's Jets Central. I know listeners of the show are like, you guys talk about the Jets a lot. Well, the Jets were the team of the offseason, and they are going to continue to be. HBO is making them do Hard Knocks. That was officially announced since we last talked, and I'm excited. How could you not be excited? Let's play a little clip, Eric, behind the glass. Credit here to CBS News Bay Area. It's Aaron Rodgers.
One of the only things I like about Hard Knocks is the voice of God who narrates it.
Right.
Liv, I hope I get to meet him. But look, you know, I understand the appeal with us. Obviously, there's a lot of eyes on me, a lot of eyes on our team, a lot of expectations for our squad. So they force it down our throats, and we got to deal with it.
I don't know. That. I mean, it stands out really as the only, I think it's, I'm glad it's them. We were texting about it a little bit yesterday, a group of us, and like, this was the most logical choice for high drama, intrigue, the team that's changed the most this offseason because of Aaron Rodgers, and maybe a version of Aaron Rodgers that changes the way we feel about him. But it is also an isolated instance of the team openly not wanting to do it. And they do have, you know, full editing control over it. And I just wonder what that means for the project itself, because like, do you hardboil Aaron Rodgers into some of those decisions? Because you've got this great chemistry going with a guy who can be a little bit difficult. Does he want stuff going out there on HBO that he's not approving of? So is he part of that process? I just think it's a little bit different where some teams just come and lay it all bare and they're happy to have the experience. And like Salah from on down just did not sound like he was hoping this wouldn't happen. That's an interesting dynamic.
Well, it's pretty intrusive. You know, I mean, if you're contending or you think you're building now to contend, I wouldn't necessarily, I mean, I guess you could even say like the old thing that we all hate to say, all in, right? I guess if you're built to legitimately contend, you want the coaching cliche of the main thing being the main thing, right? And so any extra stuff I can understand, I think from a coach or player perspective, why that would feel intrusive. But at the same time, like I did think about when I saw this, you know, the Jets organization, their media team and like their sort of PR media hybrid team, their content team, they have like a full on studio there. And so I think there are going to be a lot of people that take a little bit of that pressure off of the players, or I would assume so, because of the way that they run that operation and the experience they have creating that type of content, just more so on a team level versus a national level. So I feel like there's ways to help, you know, almost like protect from there being distractions or that feeling of intrusiveness.
Right. Listening to Aaron Rodgers, huge eye roll. I don't necessarily believe that he like feels like, oh no, like a huge spot for Aaron Rodgers in this moment of my life. I'm really disappointed about that. Is it really that big of a distraction? It's always been produced by NFL Films, which is owned by the NFL. The teams have always had some measure of control. Some teams seem to don't really care. The Cowboys, for instance, when they've done it, seem to like when they did All or Nothing, they just let it fly. And some others you can tell are pretty tightly controlled. And we can say the Jets didn't want it. I mean, the Jets are Woody Johnson, their owner, and I believe he wanted it. And so that's the Jets. The whole thing of like the NFL Films is making them do it. No, the Jets at some level, the Jets had to agree to do it. And that's ownership. And I buy that Robert Salah doesn't want to do it. And the coach, some of the players, I'm sure have mixed feelings or whatever. It's a lot of extra attention, but I bet Aaron Rodgers.
Don't you think that probably 93% of players would run to do this project?
Yes,
I think it's just
yes.
a coaching angle, if anything, where there's like,
yes.
it could be, I mean, I think back to the Hugh Jackson experience where Hard Knocks totally unmasked him as a weird leader, a weird dynamic with his own coaching staff. Like that's when things can go south. I don't think that happens with this coaching staff at all.
No, I think it makes you look better if you've got your stuff together. Sometimes it makes fairly incompetent organizations look better. I watched the Arizona Cardinals in season Hard Knocks and like you wouldn't know that they were a total house on fire watching that thing. They looked fine. They actually were pretty likable, Vance Joseph and JJ Watt. So I'm excited though that there's going to be like a lot to go through. I hope Dan's doing that Hard Knocks podcast. Do we know that yet? I guess I shouldn't.
I believe you. No, I think I walked in on a meeting where I think that was being discussed. I don't know if I was supposed to be at that meeting, but.
Breaking news works, from Mark Sessler. Okay. Oh my.
Well, because yeah, they did him and Colleen did a bang up job last year, and now it's the Jets. You got to do it. All right. We're going to go through some very short news before getting to the rest of the show because we got a meaty show. We'll start just with running backs. I'll throw these two out together. Alvin Kamara pleaded no contest to a misdemeanor charge that was stemming from that alleged assault he had in Las Vegas last year. It's now a misdemeanor. He settled out of court in a civil case. The NFL can now move forward with any punishment they want. Seems like this was the best possible outcome for Kamara. And I'm also going to throw out there that Saquon Barkley is coming close to this franchise tag deadline to sign a long-term contract. And ESPN's Diana Rossini mentioned week one could be in jeopardy. Why don't you pick one of those two, Jordan, and tell me what you think?
Yeah, I covered Saquon Barkley in college, so I'll pick Saquon Barkley here. Yeah, I mean, obviously, this is a part of it, right? Things get tenser and tenser as the deadline approaches. You know, I remember the show you guys did several weeks ago about running backs, the history of like running backs holding out and what it could actually mean to your career.
To butter us up saying you listened to some recent show.
But I do. I love this show. You guys you have no idea. Like I've listened to every episode.
Mark is
like,
glowing right now.
Oh, no, I mean, I haven't seen
Mark in a couple weeks and his summer glowing is just getting better and better. So you should check out the YouTube.
I believe that she does listen. I think there's enough proof and enough evidence.
Oh, absolutely.
This is a trusty reporter, so I'll take her at her word.
Right. You definitely listen a lot because you know that we, especially me, interrupt you in the middle of your point. Sorry about that.
Yeah, but I handle it so well, you know, like,
exactly. that's what I mean.
Because I'm ready for it. Yeah. I actually have a little timer that I reset every single time, Greg. But but yeah, no, I think, you know, it's hard to know who has more leverage here. Obviously, that offense is so dynamic with him in it. It can be so much more multiple with him in it, you know, threat of the run, even an adequate to above average run game is so significant to how other teams will defend you. But this is kind of part of it, right? I mean, I think we're just going to keep this. Some of these tensions will spill out a little bit, or I don't even want to call it tensions because this is just a part of the negotiation process. You'll hear little drips and drabs start to leak out from really well-established and trustworthy, you know, national reporters. And, you know, I'm not obviously on the ground reporting on this situation, but I think it is a complicated conversation. You think about where running back contracts are right now, where the quote-unquote lifespan of a career of a running back is right now. But you also think, hey, if you think your team might be better than you were, or you think your team might be like ready to try to really make something happen here or start to put something together. And Brian Daboll really coached that group up last year. And if you think there's a chance you could keep that momentum rolling, oftentimes organizations will maybe forsake some of that market logic. We saw the Rams do it like over and over and over again in their quest to win a Super Bowl. And sometimes the market logic gets a little bit forsaken if it means, you know, you think you can keep that forward progress rolling and really build a team that can at least contend in the postseason.
I mean, yeah, I think people also saw the Cowboys do it with Ezekiel Elliott, which is a bit of a cautionary tale on that front. I mean, there's only two running backs right now making over $14 million a year. And one of them is Christian McCaffrey, who is an absolute difference maker when he's available. And the other is Alvin Kamara, who probably will not be available for a big chunk of this to start the season because what happened with him is on video. And I do wonder, I'm eyeing to see how long how they handle that, how long a suspension might be. I mean, this is someone, they knocked a group, he and his cadre knocked a man unconscious and broke his like orbital bone, and it's on video. So I don't know. I mean, we've had a string of suspensions where in the past couple of years where you just don't know what the NFL is going to do. I would guess it would be something like 6 weeks, Greg. I don't know what you think, but it just seems like when there's video attached, it grows in severity. It's hard to shake those images. And I don't know. It's big for the Saints. They're lucky that he's not their only running back that could start.
Yeah. They drafted one in the third round, kind of a third down type of back. We'll see. I have no idea what the suspension will be for him. And I don't believe for a second that Saquon Barkley would miss week one. I tend to think Kamara's suspension won't be that long, but we've learned guessing suspensions is almost impossible. Let's wrap it up with a couple random stories. I thought it was interesting. The Germany games, not a huge surprise, but there was something like there were hundreds of thousands of people waiting to buy those tickets, and it sold out in an instant. I am really excited for those Germany games this year. Don't know if there's a chance we would be going. I hope we could go to either London or Germany. We'd be happy to do either. It would be great. Germany is my dad's homeland, but we'll see. And then finally, Mark, you wanted this story, and I love it when you dive deep into the news, the important stuff, and want something mentioned. So I will let you take the floor on the huge news that Sam Darnold was living in George Kittle's pool house, I believe, for a short time when he joined the team and started OTAs. And I believe he was on Pardon My Take and talked about that there was some supernatural energies he was picking up in that pool house.
Yeah, he basically described, this is like a new player in town staying in Kittle's pool house for a stretch of time. And that I'll read his quote here. He said, "I've never had anything like this happen to me before. One evening during his stay, he woke up around 3 a.m. and briefly felt as though he was paralyzed. He could not move. And he said the next night, the same thing happened where he was, you know, frozen in place. And he kept focusing on this thing in the corner of the room. And he sort of described it as the eerie sense of like an apparition. And I don't know, like I've always viewed Sam Darnold as a perfectly nice personality, but a rather milquetoast persona. This is a new fold to his experiences in life. And like, you know, they try to press him to make it a little more wacky than it was. But my whole thing is like, where is George Kittle on this? Like, you've got a pool house that apparently has a ghost in it. I would just like to dig in more on the whole situation.
My first thought was like, oh man, I'm kind of worried. He's describing a panic attack. Like,
yeah.
I felt like as a human, like a little concerned. I mean, you know, you maybe sometimes you have a panic attack, you can't breathe, you can't move. Maybe you see things, you know, I'm like, oh, that was my first reaction. I was like, oh buddy, you know, that stinks. But then my second thought was, is George Kittle pranking him? This is my second thought, you know, welcome to the team. Here's the ghost in my pool house.
Well, it doesn't sound like it. I mean, that's
well, that feels logical though, knowing what we know of him. I will say one time
you got to hire a ghost though. I mean, that's complicated.
That's tough. I don't know where that's black market stuff. When I was in high school, I went to this totally absurd summertime because I was like in student council, and it was like they sent some of us to this thing called Boys State. Okay, where you go and you do like a mock government. And my friend and I were like, we're not doing the mock government thing. They had like an attaché like daily newspaper. And so we joined this newspaper with literally no boss or oversight. So we were five kids living like in a dorm room, cranking out these absurd daily papers. I'll only mention this because—
About what? What was the topic of the papers?
We vaguely covered like this forming student government. We broke into some of their rooms and took like government documents. We created our own sports page, and there was no internet. So like I wrote a story that Dan Marino had been traded to the Chicago Bears. And then you just watch like the lunchroom start to catch fire as this false rumor is spreading around this entire thing. And you got people on their payphones calling their dads and stuff. And it was just all baloney. But like at night we were totally unsupervised. And this was on this campus in Connecticut. And we saw like up in the sort of an attic area, this one building, this green light. And we were like, what's going on up there? So a couple of us, this could have been a good story. We walked up these stairs to the top of this building, and it was a locked door. But as we got closer and closer, three or four of us, like our bodies completely froze. We couldn't move for like minutes. And then finally, like we snapped out of it and everyone ran out of there and we like couldn't talk about it for like the next day or two. So when I read this thing from Sam Darnold, I was like, I have one experience in my life where I was like, I can't explain what happened. It was like frozen panic. And it wasn't like just me. It was like three or four of us were left totally inoperable for like the next hour or so. So I don't know. Who knows?
That ghost was pretty pissed about the rumor you started.
Yeah. Mm.
He's like, I'm going to get this guy.
It's like the ghost of
He's a Dan Bears
Marino.
Fan.
I mean, Dan Marino is powerful. I don't know.
Just Dolphins fan.
He was that powerful. I love that connection. I had not heard that story, Mark. I wonder how often do you think about that story?
Oh, probably like once a day.
If you guys had a ghost, would you be like, hey man, or lady, or whoever, you know, take your space. It's fine. Mutual respect. Like you do your thing, I'll do my thing. Or would you try to do something about it? I feel like I'm the first one. I would just be like, you do your thing. You know, you were probably here first, so you go for it. Please don't hurt me. Other than that, like all good, all you.
I mean,
feel free
to
eavesdrop on conversations.
Yeah, I think as long as its thing isn't like. Suddenly you walk out into the kitchen and like every drawer is open and like plates are shattered all over the place. Like keep your playfulness. Let's just cohabit together. We can try to make this work.
It's like roommates. Yeah. Roommates.
The breaking news here really is that now Sam Darnold is more interesting to Mark Sessler for the 2023 season.
I think to big. All of us.
Sam Darnold.
I really don't want to tee this up. I'm so sorry. You guys can kick me off the show. Is Sam Darnold like now literally seeing ghosts?
Of course.
I'm so sorry. Kick me off the show. I'm so sorry.
How did we miss that? All right, let's take a quick break and we will come back talking play callers and some QB rankings.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all, but here's a preview of this week's episode. Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like check out these hair. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, tapping, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, like John Cena got it. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but.
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
But let's say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
If there's one coach in the NFL that can stop Sam Darnold, can help Sam Darnold from seeing ghosts, it's your boy, Jordan, Kyle Shanahan, who, you know, isn't the total subject of your new podcast, Play Callers, but it does kind of start with him. And like I mentioned at the top of the show, everyone should check it out wherever you get your podcasts. It's a limited series podcast. It's fantastic. It's about the Shanahan coaching tree and their influence on the NFL. And before we talk about it for a few minutes, let's listen to a little clip here from Kyle himself.
Kyle threw himself into football, whether hanging on to Mike Shanahan's every word, crossing paths in Denver with the Broncos teenage ball boy named Mike McDaniel, by the way, or preparing for the college game that first sent him to Duke and then to Texas.
That's why I was able to earn a scholarship, not because I was naturally that good. I was an okay high school player, but I knew how to work and the standard of how to work. And it was because I saw it as life and death. I saw it as, you know, that's what I do, even though I went to college to play football, which probably isn't the best thing to tell everybody, but it was for me. And that's what I saw in my mind. I was playing football. All I would do was work out because I wanted to be a receiver. I remember when I transferred to Texas and we had finals during our bowl practices. We're all supposed to miss the practice because we had a final. And I was the only one who was redshirting because I transferred there. I had been waiting for this scrimmage and I had a final on that day and I just showed up to the scrimmage and everyone was trying to make me leave saying I'll fail the class. And I had to argue with everyone there like, I know I'll fail the class. And that's a decision I'm making right now. I'm not missing this practice. And even though I had a C in there, it turned into an F because I would not miss the practice. And it wasn't that I was trying to show the coaches how committed I was. It was just how one track my mind was.
So that's a clip from Play Callers, and it goes deep. Like, what did you come out of this thinking about Kyle specifically, and how the other guys kind of look at him?
I mean, it's their identities. Not just in football, but like amongst each other is something that is explored through the course of the series because they have all had this massive impact on each other. These four in particular, and you know, you do get questions, you know, why did you pick these four? Why are these? Because they were all together in Houston, some of them in Atlanta, and then also in Washington. And they really, the way that they worked with each other and also fought with each other under Kyle, who was all of their boss at one point, which shapes the dynamic henceforth, then it formed these evolutions and these ripple effects that started moving and shaping the league and changing faster and faster and faster. And that was really one of my main takeaways is after, you know, I left the interview, I was like, okay, I get it. In terms of why they're all of the dynamics were what they were and how they debated with each other and how they argued, but in a way that created ideas and that functional competition that sometimes could veer toward the dysfunctional that really helped bring forth these ideas because everyone was competing to get calls on his call sheet, whether it was, you know, Matt LaFleur, Mike McDaniel or Sean McVay, the entire goal was to get calls on his call sheet, which when you start the foundation of your friendship or your, you know, colleague relationship or, you know, that way, that automatically sets quite a tone for whatever happens to you as a group moving forward.
I just, I think anyone, no matter how drenched you are in the NFL, would learn so much from this. And it really is about the nature of their personalities. And like, that's just a great example. I get the concept of like coaches want to be heard and they want to have input, but the obsessive nature of trying to have your imprint on a game plan and beyond that, like even to create a play from scratch, you had a great example that if like someone went to Kyle Shanahan with an idea, it was like he would mercilessly take you through the task of trying to undo that play concept. Like, this is why it won't work. Or you tell me why it will work. And it's just like, he seems like, I thought your obsession with this project helped explain their obsession. Like there was just this drumbeat throughout it. And I do, because it was just like you, I mean, I could tell that you enjoyed talking to them and in reverse too. There's not a lot of football projects out there that really remind me of this. I mean, I think it's the perfect blend of like, I could tell you, you know, you have a lot of, I want to know how you wrote sort of the script around the interviews because so much work went into that. I binged it today and like all these different voices who had shared experiences found a way to tell new stories every time. And like, I will just give one little thing that I found gripping because we all remember RG3's rookie year and you went through with Kyle and others like the, and Mike McDaniel's obviously just incredible. You find out that he's not just good at the mic, like there's just this nature to him where like they have this confidence about what they do. But with RG3, that they sat him down before his rookie year. And Greg, you'll remember this, that like we went into week one having no idea what that offense was going to look like. They kept it a secret. They tried so hard not to have anyone whisper about it. And they worked so closely with RG3 that they went through every single one of his Baylor snaps. And then they were like, bang, wait a minute, to use him correctly and to totally get defenses bewildered from the start. It's like, we're just going to implement the pistol, which now it's like all these teams started to do that after, but it's like they completely showed up as a terrorizing mystery from week one. And it was like, that's the beauty of Kyle Shanahan and his staff. And they were so competitive about it. So I just like, I have a little more to go. I went to it, but I think like, if you're a listener, you'll keep doing the thing where you go back 15 seconds or back 30 seconds. Cause I'm like, wait, what did he just say? Like there's just, it's in a good way, very dense. You put so much work into it. And I think it's one of the most incredible projects football wise that I've ever experienced. Mm. So congratulations.
Oh, thank you, Mark. That's so nice of you to say. Yeah, this, the work that went into it, of course, it's not about that. It's about who these people are and what they said. But the reporting process, I mean, it's a year of like deep dive reporting and research. And it's not just talking to the voices that you hear, which, you know, are of course these four, but also Robert Saleh, Brandon Staley, people, personnel people across the league, RG3, Andrew Whitworth, you know, coaches and analysts, and Steve Wyche is great in it also. And, you know, it wasn't just that, it was also talking to people around these people and talking to people on background, and hours and hours and hours of study, because I had this theory and this hypothesis that because I'd seen being a beat writer, I think, afforded me this gift of looking at the story in a specific way. And being on the ground, watching all of these things the Rams have done for the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, there were certain moments in their timeline where there were inflection points and very clear pivots. It was like the head coach was showing his work, not just of what he was trying to do and how he was trying to evolve his own system forward, but, and I'm not talking about like the moves even, I'm talking about schematically out there on the field watching at practice. And you could see those inflection points, and they were, it was also as his identity as a coach was forming. And the series goes into that with all of these guys, because I went into this with this theory that I approached them all with over many, many, many requests to actually, hey, can we sit down and talk? You know, I approach them with this theory, like, I think that you are like living your football life and you are living your football philosophy in real time. And I think what is different about this generation of coaches specifically is they are showing their work. They are showing the why of what they're doing, because it is so twisted up with who they are as people, for better and for worse, that they can't help but resemble their offenses and vice versa. You see it in every single one of these coaches. And that's something that I think makes them really unique. And it also, it exposes them in a way where, and I don't say that in a negative way. I mean, like it just, they're right there out in front of you. And I think that was part of the reason why they were so comfortable talking about some of these things that you won't hear them normally talk about, or any coach normally talk about, because they understand that this is what the bargain that they have made in order to constantly be on the front of those innovation loops that they try to create and then outrun their own creations.
I do want to ask, because like you go deep with so many of them, you got to know them, like which one of these coaches is like, and I say this in a nice way.
Such
not
a Mark question. Pick which,
well, no, not a, not
pick
a,
which
like a criminal
host
way,
do you like the best?
Yeah, no, which one is just the biggest psycho? Because I mean, they all seem to me so insanely, you know, wedded to this process.
I think they all have those qualities in different ways. I mean it kindly, obviously, like, but it, they all have this certain type of obsessiveness, but it was also like fingerprints, right? Everything, every strain of that obsessiveness differed from each and every one. Like after I got done talking to Kyle Shanahan, I first of all thought, maybe like I might be murdered like mid interview, but like again, like
so
it just
he's
because
the answer.
He's
the
really
answer.
Really intense. But then you think like you know, sometimes you'd sit with Mike McDaniel and you'd be just like blown away by why is this guy being so candid? Like why is he so comfortable talking about where he gets ideas? I've never heard a coach that early in his career, first, second year, third year, fifth year head coaches are so like careful with how they talk about football to not give anything away, because they feel like they're on their back foot because they have to catch up to everybody else. And Mike instead was like, let me tell you the time I dreamed up a left-handed fake boot for Tua, like, and it went 80 yards for a touchdown. I'm like, sick, man. Cool. I'll take it. Yeah. And then, and you sit there and you think like, you're almost frozen, like, you know, thinking, why in the heck is this person telling me this? But then you realize it's just how they live. They, it's how they process out loud. And then on the other hand, like when I talked to Kyle, like I got a very different sense from him than a lot of the other guys, because you get this like long haul trucker feel where it's like, you know, he is, there's a darkness to what coaches do. Especially coaches who are at the forefront of new ideas and trying to be the ones who are competing to not just win games, but to have a legacy that says they helped shape the game, which is where I think even maybe more so than wins and losses, what a lot of these coaches want is to have been known in their careers as somebody who impacted the sport's timeline. And there's a darkness to that because, like I said, you're creating these loops of innovation. And the second you created one answer to one problem, it will never work the same again. You are hunted by everyone else. You're constantly sprinting, trying to outrun the thing that you created. And if it catches you, you might lose years, like we saw with Sean McVay and the Patriots. And like you might, and Mike McDaniel says it, he said it took years off his life. Like, you know, like it's there's a darkness to it. But then you have these certain people, you have people who are grappling with it, which Sean McVay very much did through 2022, grappling with what that means and what a life of that will mean. And you have people who are very comfortable living there. And I know everyone makes the joke about Kyle Shanahan's like dark quotes about, we don't know if anyone's going to be alive, you know, the from what was it, a couple years ago. But there was this sense of...
he was born in the darkness. He was raised in it. Yeah.
It's the goth NFL coach, right? No, but like you have to exist there and get comfortable existing there almost to a point where it is how your brain works versus something that you can, that you step in and out of. And of any of them, really, it felt like he was the one, and that's why I started joking, he's the long haul trucker, because it felt like he was the one who was so comfortable existing in that space where you're constantly at conflict with yourself and you're constantly being strained like a rubber band. You want to test it and see how far you can stretch it before it snaps, even though you know it will hurt like hell if it snaps. And I think that that's something that was super interesting. And a theory I had because... you know, it just seemed like that was how it would be. And then going and doing like sort of an archaeological dig and trying to figure all of this out. Like I said, through a year of reporting, it just was, it ended up being an incredibly fascinating experience.
I mean, Kyle is a product of his father and, you know, his father's up, you know, for Hall of Fame consideration and everything. And it's just so interesting to me that he is he is the continuation, because to me Mike Shanahan is a Hall of Famer because he changed the NFL, and I actually think Kyle and this whole generation almost should be taken into consideration with Mike, because if you're around for the Mike Shanahan days, even in the Jay Cutler era, even in the post Elway era, like he was the one that was ahead of the rest of the league in terms of the schemes, and except there his guys weren't having that success. But everyone knew he was the guy, and there was a darkness to him in a serious way. And I think it messed up his career. There's a great book called A Few Seconds of Panic, which is weirdly one of the best football books I've ever read, by this guy who like sat in as a kicker in the Broncos training camp. But I recommend people read it. And it gave a great behind the scenes of like how tortured sort of Shanahan was. And I just think Kyle like learned everything from his father like that and then continued it. And it's just like a dynasty in terms of how they've changed the NFL. But Kyle, I think something he did better was treat the people underneath him better and gave them agency. And you see that. And you see that in the confidence of McDaniel, who's earlier in his career and maybe not, doesn't have the bruises that Kyle has. And it's awesome. Everyone should check it out. I sometimes think like, I love those old books by Paul Zimmerman, The Thinking Guide Man to Football. And those are all, a lot of that is about scheme, and it's about the evolution of scheme. And it has coaches speaking very openly about scheme and players. And you really learn a lot. And that was the type of stuff I really loved. I know Chris Wessling, our great friend, really loved those books because it's how we learned about football. And sometimes you think, man, I wish those types of books were being written now. And your project kind of get me thinking like, this is the new version of that. Like maybe those books aren't exactly being written now. I hope they will be. You'd write a great one, Jordan. But like this podcast series is a version of that, of sort of moving the medium forward. So,
you know, Greg, this happens to us sometimes. And like typically if we're in the studio, you look over at my laptop. But the note that I had here in purple is, this is a bomb drop that made me think of Z. I mean, like, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like, there just aren't that many things out there like this. And so it's also the perfect time of year. As we're getting back, if you're a fan that's, you know, coming off your vacations, like you're getting back into this, like, it's not a refresher. It's just like a super deep dive into an unexpected lake of knowledge. And like, it's the right time to do that.
Yeah. If I could, I just want to share one thing too. You know, it, first of all, that's, thank you. As you could see, I'm getting very red over here. YouTube watchers will.
Don't worry, we'll bring you down. Your Desmond Ritter takes shortly.
What did Mark say? Arthur Smith's going to FedEx some weirdness into the Falcons offense. That was a good one. I told you. I listened to the show.
You do.
Wow. I religiously listen to the show.
You definitely listen closer to Mark than I do. I don't even remember that.
Well, so those books that you talked about, like, they're an example of having access to ideas and democracy in football, like making ideas available to everybody and making giving people access to what it is really like. And throughout the entire course of the series, and I'm sure you guys can speak to this as well, there's all these examples and they seem like really, they're really interesting stories. It's why I put them in there, is they're fascinating stories. But I also put them in there because it illustrates what happens when you have access from a young age in your coaching career for a variety of reasons. What can happen when you are Kyle Shanahan and you are sitting in, you know, Tampa Bay, and you're lurking in defensive meetings with some of the greatest defensive coaches that have ever walked among us, and then also you're logging plays, you know, on one of those giant old square computers, right? And you're logging plays out of the NFL's largest playbook at that time that nobody has access to, because the internet isn't the internet we know today. And, you know, PDFs don't exist of this thing. And, you know, people aren't going out and clinicking it and things like that. And so you see these examples, and then he's training other coaches. He's training, you know, Sean McVay, he's training Matt LaFleur, he's training Mike McDaniel, in what those ideas are and what that knowledge is. And so one of the things that I really wanted to do was show that, while also reminding people that, you know, not everybody has access to those ideas. And, you know, this is a project where I wanted people to feel like they were being let in, that they could see and hear and feel what people in these positions are talking about as football changes, as football evolves, as ideas happen. Because when more people have access to those ideas, they turn those into opportunities, they turn those into change. And I think that is something that I really wanted people to feel, was like, you aren't on the outside looking in with this project. You're sitting in the chair with me. You are right there with me, listening to some truly unhinged rants at times, but also some really, really smart, really interesting, really, really cool football stuff, how it happens, how it's made, how it works, why it works, and how it shapes people, and also how it shapes the identity of the sport that we love.
So everyone check that out, Play Callers. Let's take a quick break. Again, Play Callers, Jordan, we're not done with you yet, though. We're going to talk QB rankings, and we'll do that right after the break.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
All right, and we are back. Mark, we've done the QB index the last 2 years. You did
That's
it last
true.
Year.
That's correct.
I did it 2 years ago. I did it some years previous. Our great friend Chris did it for a few years as well. And I thought, you know, before we get training camp started, we're a little less than 2 weeks away. Some of those Hall of Fame teams, I think, show up next week. Let's get these QB rankings down from the guys who know. Me and you, we're the experts. So we put our rankings together, Jordan, and we combined them. But it turns out we didn't really need to because Mark and I were more similar on these rankings. We didn't know what each other picked. We're seeing this after the fact. We combined our rankings to make a one around the NFL official quarterback ranking entering the 2023 season. And it was shocking how few players we disagreed on. Like, 25 plus of them, 28 of them almost were within one or two spots. It was very strange. There's only a couple we disagreed, but that's fine. That means that we're in agreement on where everything's standing. I'm going to go back to front and I'm going to do it in tiers so we don't, you know, have a 2.5 hour show. So let's start from 32 to 28, I believe. And We did include rookies in our rankings. None of the rookies are right here. So these are kind of the guys who have been in the league, but we're not really feeling coming into the year. We had a tie in last with Colt McCoy and Desmond Ridder. We had Sam Howell at 30th. We had Baker Mayfield at 29th. And we had Jordan Love at 28th. So those five teams, you're going into the season. I mean, Cardinals fans don't need to be told this, but the other ones might be a little disappointed that they're going into the season with about as low expectations at quarterback at a time when I feel like there's higher expectations in a deeper group of quarterbacks, Mark, than ever. Who stuck out to you the most out of that group?
I mean, I think for me, it's just sort of a lot of incomplete. Like, we just don't know what Desmond Ridder is beyond a very small sample size. Same with Howell, you know, Love. It's like guys where it's like this, where they end up on this list, you know, a year from now could be very different. I think of like even last season doing QBNX, and just as an aside, Greg, it's not that different than me trying to bring this project to Kyle Shanahan because you started QB Index. And so I'm like, you know, wondering all day long, like, what will Greg's results be compared to mine? And is this going to be another disaster? So I'm kind of happy to see how close we were. But, you know, got like last year, Justin Fields, when I remember doing this in September, hovered at like 30 through 32 for a big chunk of time and then completely grew into something else. And so I think these are just guys where it's like, and we've got some rookies coming up next. We just don't know. We don't know. And like, but there's no evidence that it's like, wait a minute, Desmond Ridder's blowing my mind from what I saw either. So you're down at the near bottom of the list.
No, I went and watched Desmond Ridder's games. This is as good a time to give my reviews. And look, I know there's like a push. I've seen it from Dan Orlovsky, for instance, Ben Solak, former guest of the pod, who's seeing some good things in Ridder and trying to hype him up going into the season. I watched those games and I didn't see it. I did see that he got a little better every week. One thing he did was,
I thought so too.
He prevented, his probably standout trait was like, he didn't make many bad decisions. That's pretty good. I mean, that's something, but he also didn't show you anything else that felt plus. that like there was no other trait. Certainly wasn't his playmaking or his running or his creativity. That was almost a little disappointing. It's not his arm. It's not his accuracy. So I just look at the NFL now and it's like not making a mistake isn't enough to be your greatest asset. And then maybe he'll be there mentally where he can get, it just feels like the floor is low. So I had him, did I have him dead last going into the year? Cause I think, I mean, no, I had Colt McCoy last, but I had Ritter next because at least with Howell and Baker, I guess, who I had 30th, you had him 28th, you had him a little higher than me. Like, I just feel like there's a little more of a ceiling there where Ritter's hoping, I feel like, to be early career Alex Smith.
Yeah, I think, well, I think that being neutral, like you're saying, not making a mistake. So that makes you sort of like put you in that neutral zone as a player where you're not fluctuating highly up or down. I think that maybe would outrank people who have a history of making lots of mistakes, right?
Right. If he can continue that way, he would be better than Baker, for instance.
Yeah. And so, but I also think that, like, I did not participate in this. I'm just here to judge. and to try to nitpick in various ways, but, or agree with everything you guys say, that'd probably be easier. But, you know, the thing that I think about with specifically, again, not to bring it back with a shameless plug, but Arthur Smith is one of the branches out of this in a very different way. He's got his own fingerprints on it in terms of various other people that he's worked on of the system. And a lot of what sometimes you see, and Kyle Shanahan does this a little bit too, but sometimes you see this gravitation of offensive coaches who try to make their run game their quarterback, quote unquote, or make the run game the thing that is most going to threaten, or make the run game the thing that has the most multiplicity in it, and have somebody who can, you know, again, not set them back, not make mistakes. And you find sometimes in the earliest iterations of what this is, you find sometimes that can raise the floor of the entire team. So when, you know, obviously I didn't participate in this exercise, but I almost wonder how much like fit and role plays into this, because normally we think about quarterbacks, we think, no, they have to be judged in a vacuum because they are the guy. So they should be judged in a vacuum. And I think in most cases that is true. But in some cases with some offenses and some systems, I almost wonder if part to whole is a little bit more of a rational way to judge. And then I also agree, a lot of incompletes, right? I wish it was like, we love lists, right? Because we're the NFL is a ordered sport. We like numbers and, you know, wins and losses and, you know, but, and we also like listing things, especially this time of year. But I think like, I wish it was like 16 and then a big pool, you know?
Yeah.
In this list, we'll get to the rookies next, or just kind of like whatever. How we're all just guessing with Howell and Jordan Love. Although Jordan Love, I find more interesting than most. I feel like his floor and ceiling are crazy. I do think his ceiling is way higher than people think. And I just think he's been a fascinating player when he's been on the field in the preseason and in the regular season, in that he makes more insane throws per throw than just about anyone. And he makes crazy decisions too. So I am interested, Jordan, like, you know, with LaFleur, it's a big moment for LaFleur because it's a totally different quarterback. It's a totally different test. And it's a test of LaFleur, like what he's really got. Can he really coach like a fourth year player in Love, but who is actually older than almost everyone he's throwing to?
Yeah. One thing that was really cool about reporting this project was entering that building as they were transitioning into a new era. Because you could really feel it. I can't really describe what it felt like, but everyone was searching, seeking. So, you know, Matt LaFleur is really open in one of the episodes about what teams he's watching. Like he flat out talks about it and where he's getting ideas from and who he's like wanting to potentially steal plays from, like they all, you know, everyone in the league does, but specifically how he's thinking about that. And I think there's a lot that has been said and discussed about the compromise that went into running an offense with, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Hall of Fame quarterback, and what that meant, and especially someone who was very particular about the things that he wanted to do versus what the system asked for, and how to change those types of things. And but I think even with a quarterback with way less experience, and you know, who is so much less of a known talent as Jordan Love is, there's still compromise that comes into it. You're still trying to help your quarterback feel successful in the system that you are running and in the plays that he is calling. And so that's just going to look different, but it's not like compromise goes away, because I think that's something that Matt LaFleur really learned, not just with Aaron Rodgers, but he talks about it with Matt Ryan too, of how you learn how to work with what feels right and feels comfortable for the guy that you have throwing the ball and calling, you know, the play to the other 10 people in the huddle, where player often in specifically in what Matt LaFleur does, player often wins over scheme. Whereas in a lot of other iterations of this offense, scheme always just dominates player or had in the past. And so I think that's what I'm most interested in. And I think it's going to be an evolving thing. I don't know if we could say what the offense would look like right now, because, you know, Matt LaFleur got to LA with Sean McVay and they thought they were going to come out and run all 12 personnel in 2017. And then they got through half of OTAs and decided they didn't like that plan. And then they scrapped it and then changed the entire plan around to as that hugely high deployment of 11 personnel that we see today. So I think he can pull from his experiences and his quote unquote his roots in that regard, because this is going to be something that does change as the season goes and even as training camp goes. They're probably going to just try stuff half the time.
Yeah, he's a weird fit. I mean, Love to me fits that offense even less naturally than Aaron Rodgers certainly does. I don't see a Jordan Love like with just like doing quick get, you know, getting the ball out of his hands quickly all the time. That's not necessarily his strength. Let's go to the weirdest section on the group and probably have the least to talk about, Mark, here, which is just like rookies and Russell Wilson. I don't know how Russell Wilson got stuck down here, partly because you ranked him 27th. I had him 22nd. I at least saw like I could see Russell Wilson, and it's not just because Sean Payton's there, but I can see Russell Wilson being closer to league average this year. And so this is where we just stuck the rookies because we kind of didn't know where to put them. We had them in order. Bryce Young, we had 24th overall. Wilson is 25th. Anthony Richardson is 26th. And Stroud is 27th. We pretty much had the same order in terms of rookies, Young, Richardson, Stroud in terms of this year. And that's what we're judging it on, by the way, is this year. We're not talking about 5 years. We're not talking about 3 years. We're just like, who would you want this year? And Russell Wilson stuck with a bunch of rookies. It's a pretty big change.
I mean, Russell Wilson was not at any point during the last time we saw him the 22nd best quarterback in the league. So I think that's what makes the exercise a little bit tough. Like,
right. You're trying to reset it and saying where you think you'll be this year. Yeah.
Right. But but to Jordan's point, like it would make me think differently about Desmond Ridder as the worst quarterback in the league, because he's set up to thrive in an offense that's going to literally physically destroy people. So I don't know, that's sort of the challenge here. But for me, Wilson, I'm fine with him being at 27. He's a little inflated here for my liking. Rookies are TBA. I initially just had rookies like in their own category and just did 29.
Yeah, I probably would have preferred that too. And Wilson would make sense at the top of that last tier we just talked about. So yeah. It's fine.
I would love to see if you guys would draw this out like on actual sheets of paper or like a dry erase board or something, because you'd have like order and structure and then this giant like mass of names and then like Russell Wilson over here out wide on an island or and like someone else over here. Like I love it.
Eric has it color coding on a Google spreadsheet.
Yeah, so we should share that with people. But like doing this last year for the first time, there was like strange Mondays in October where I'm like, there's 14 quarterbacks that all sort of are just the same level of value to their team. I mean, you get out of the top 12, 13, and it becomes a murky, murky, complex swamp.
Well, I love doing this, though, because otherwise, now that, you know, I'm not doing QB Index, you just don't do it. And just to see where the names are, and I'm thinking about where they were in previous years, I think it's a helpful exercise, because the next group, I'm going to include like a lot of the guy, and this is a big group. And to me, it's sort of the Dalton line and below and a big group of them. And I'm going to go all the way up to 16 because I'm going to make this one shorter. We'll make it a mini group. We'll go Derek Carr at 19. We got Jimmy G at 20. Mac Jones, who I think, Mark, maybe my enthusiasm for has rubbed off on you or vice versa. I don't know. I think collectively, we probably have him higher in this exercise than most would. Kenny Pickett's at 22, and then Brock Purdy is at 23. Let's start with Purdy, because that actually was the player I believe we disagreed on the most. You had him 19th. So you had him much closer to Dalton line. I had him 27th. I tried to take him out of that system. And I just tried to think of these other guys, Mac Jones, for instance, Derek Carr, for instance, some of these guys, Jimmy G, which maybe is an awkward comparison because you could say Purdy outplayed Jimmy G last year and think like if I put him in San Francisco's system, like who do I want more? And Purdy, maybe I'm just a hater, lost out on that exercise for me to most of these guys. So I had him much lower. You had him 19th. I'm fine with him landing where he did, which was 23rd. But he's at the bottom of this tier. That's with Carr, Jimmy G, Mac, Pickett, and Purdy.
I mean, it's certainly another wait and see. And I have been pro Purdy the entire time, probably possibly too much. And that's another one where it's hard for me to separate, like, who is this player versus everything I've just learned about, you know, in years prior and today about Kyle Shanahan. It's like, I could trust Kyle Shanahan to like turn like Natalie Portman into a functional signal caller. So it's like, I really like think that we need to see more from Brock Purdy and we need to see more from defenses that have learned a lot about him over the course of an offseason. But show me the game where he didn't thrive. I mean, if that's who he is, it's like, I kind of don't really care because I don't have any evidence that he's a much lesser quarterback. I mean, he's not going to destroy you with his athleticism, but talk about the great decision-making. I mean, I listen to how his own teammates talk about him. And that kind of sold me too, because it's like this, some of these guys, they come out of nowhere. That's just the way it is. And like, it can be system, but they also, you know, he came out of the books like as one of the smartest college quarterbacks of his class. And it showed in the fire for a team that like could have fallen off a cliff. We didn't know what would happen. And he completely shone.
Like Portman, who went to Harvard. I mean, Portman would come in.
Speaking of smartest in her class.
Yeah. I think she would fit in the system. I think she'd be mobile. I think she'd be a huge injury risk.
I'd say that she would be an injury threat.
I don't think she would hold up to the week-to-week you know, hits that she would take in the NFL, but I'd like to see her back there. I now look at this, and I'm rethinking Jimmy G. Like, Jimmy G's 20th, Purdy's 23rd. I do believe in Jimmy G having a better season this year with Josh McDaniels, and people give him credit. I always thought he was slightly awkward fit for Kyle Shanahan. Like, looking at those two and what, you know, Jordan, Jimmy G, Purdy, and the rest of this group, but especially, you know, coming off what you just learned in San Francisco, like, how do you think they look at those two guys? How do you think they look at Purdy? Like, would they think we have him way too low?
Well, I just think again, if we're pitching a play for the call sheet here and we're expecting an argument in every which way and every turn, I think that you'd be getting asked, like, what basis are you evaluating the players and are they the same? Because you can remove Purdy from Shanahan's system for the ranking, but you're also talking about Garoppolo and McDaniels working together.
Right.
So that's where I kind of I start to see or like wonder a little bit about.
I'm removing them. Okay. I think Jimmy G is a little more scheme, maybe independent than people would give him credit for.
Yeah. And honestly, what's kind of cool about this year with some of the movement that happened last year is we're going to see. Right. We're going to see really who a lot of people are, some of these quarterbacks who have kind of been in that like murky, swampy zone. We're going to kind of see like if they can differentiate themselves and how they can and what specifically that collaboration will look like with their coordinators and with, you know, the people that are they're designing these systems with. Because, you know, I think people knock the quote unquote, the system quarterback. And I don't think that's always fair because I always feel like you should be designing an offense that supports your quarterback and makes him feel comfortable and free.
Bingo.
Like maybe you don't want to get carried away with like telling him exactly where to throw it, which totally blows up in your face when defenses rotate after the snap. But like what you probably want to do is make sure that quarterback can play fast and free and understands what he's seeing and can feel that flow and get into that rhythm. And so, you know, I just think like it's okay if you're a system quarterback.
Right. Quarterbacks say that all the time. Every quarterback is a system quarterback or should want to be a system quarterback. Like your ability to fit within a system is a trait. And so maybe we had Purdy a little bit low.
Or you did.
I'm excited. I did. An episode where Greg is openly doubting his decisions.
Yeah.
I was hoping for this.
I like Mac over Pickett. Eat it, Steelers fans. We'll see, though. We'll see. I think they're similar-ish type players and talents. I think Saints fans and their media definitely see Derek Carr as better than the 19th best quarterback in the league. And if he can play well right off the bat with the Saints, like, he'll prove it. He has been someone in the history of QB Index that has bounced up and down more than just about anyone. Two seasons where he looked top 10-ish, a couple seasons where he was not top 20-ish. I don't totally trust him, and that's why he's there. Let's have a mini tier, which is right below the Dalton line, which would be Tannehill, Goff, and Daniel Jones. They are 16, 17, and 18. We are the last men standing on Tannehill Island, Mark, to have him that high. I think I heard Mina Kimes' podcast on QBs, and I can't even remember. I don't even know if they got to Tannehill. Like, he was buried there. But I still like to think of him, and I think he's a system quarterback. If you put him on a lot of teams, I think it would upgrade a lot of situations. And so for this year and this year only, I still think he has something left in him, and I gave him just an edge over Goff and Daniel Jones.
Yeah, I mean, I think like with Tannehill, again, like the human side of it, like the way he plays, his rugged, fiery nature, and just sort of, I think, what he's done with his own career. I do still believe in him. The Titans potentially do not at this point. So that's a concern. They've seen more of him than I have. But for me, like, I think if
I don't know, they're paying him a lot of money. They kept him around. I think they know that they're better with it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm with you. They would like to upgrade, but I think they also like realize there's a decent chance the next guy won't be better than Tannehill. Certainly not from a few years ago.
I love to hear what Jordan has to say about Goff, because I think last year, like, Goff kind of gave the middle finger to everyone that's ripped on Goff for the last half decade. He was sensational. It's like, but then I'm like, I think that you get stuck is that Jared Goff, or was that offense? And like, do I trust Jared Goff based on the career wide sample size? But like, players develop and grow. And like, he was really just pretty immaculate for quarters at a time. And I think that was one where it's like, I had to separate what I think of him from what is actually happening on tape right here. So I think from where he sits, there could be some Lions fans to say, you guys are ignoring too much about his most recent body of work.
He could be ahead of Tannehill or Cousins or maybe Fields. I could see that argument.
I think this year will tell us definitively. I don't think any other year except for the one that's coming will tell us what we need to know about Jared Goff, because the his rookie season obviously was terrible for a variety of reasons. Then 17, 18 were phenomenal, again, for a variety of reasons, not excluding his arm talent, not excluding the way that he can run those boots and all of that, and operate the system. And, you know, 19, 20 were regression years, again, for a lot of different reasons. And then, you know, having consistency, stability, getting confidence, developing, growing, becoming an older adult, like all of those things took place and are taking place in Detroit. And also working with somebody who, you know, one thing I don't think we talk enough about is the constant rotating of offensive coordinators that Jared had in LA. Because that's really the person you're working with the most. And that's changing all the time. And so are the expectations of the head coach as you get closer and closer to contention. And it's not a knock on anybody. It's just the paces didn't match at a certain point. That's okay, right? That's all right. But in Detroit, his pace of how he's developing is also matching the growth of the team and the further in contention of the team and the threat that the team presents against the rest of the league. They're growing at the same time. And there's a continuity there that I think is really, really important and really valuable with Ben Johnson. You know, I hear great things about Ben Johnson, obviously. And I do think that this year, this coming year, will tell us what we do need to know about Jared Goff, probably more so than any other year previously or any other assumption we have made or have not made about Jared Goff previously.
Yeah, my guess is he finishes QB Index higher than 17. I just think he's set up, and I think, like Cousins, there's sort of a misconception with Goff that he's just always the same in the middle. And it's like, you know, his highs are pretty high. I actually saw this tweet. I forget which Rams site it was, how that game we went to, Mark, the Thursday nighter against Minnesota by Jared Goff, was like the highest ranked by some analytical measure start in Rams history by any quarterback. And so that always colors it for me. We saw him at his very best. That was when he was absolutely peaking. And his best is like really good and really, really like talented in terms of his arm. And he reminds me of Cousins in that way. Cousins like is as streaky a quarterback as there's been in the QB index over the last decade, where he'll play top five for about six straight weeks. And then he'll stink for about six straight weeks. And you don't know what you have. And Goff's seasons have been a little bit like that, but I think he'll end up higher. Okay. Now let's go ahead.
What, guys, sorry, Greg, I don't want to cut you off. I'm so sorry. Please. But no, like, one last point on Goff that I think is really important that we need to reframe in that regard is like a lot of the time, especially when it became quite clear that a team could be contenders for Super Bowl much quicker than anybody thought back in 17, 18, and then onward beyond in those years beyond when the paces didn't line up. There was all of this talk about what is his ceiling? Can he ever re-reach his ceiling? And I don't think there was enough conversation, whether it was internally or externally, about how can we raise his floor instead of what can we re-reach or refine or rediscover what a ceiling could be. Raising the floor actually became so much more important in his overall development and trajectory. And I think that's what Detroit did in terms of reframing that entire conversation as, hey, let's stop worrying so much about the ceiling right now, because we're not a team that needs to worry about the ceiling right now, which, again, it's a fair worry in other buildings that were built contenders. But Detroit sits there and says, let's think about how we can actually raise the floor of what he's capable of doing. And the ceiling takes care of itself at that point.
Well, he's also, I just looked at our list, 1 to 32. He's probably the least mobile starter in the NFL. There's not, it's crazy to think that, because he's actually worked on his mobility. He's like a little better than he used to be. It might, the other contender is probably Stafford, who you don't think of as like totally immobile, but at this point he's had injuries and doesn't move well. And that's just how the NFL has gone. Like, there used to be 12 Jared Goffs. Now he might be the 32nd most athletic starting quarterback, just, you know, something to consider. That does hurt your ceiling. So the next group has some incredible athletes.
That's a big win for Colt McCoy, by the way, your previous statement there. So,
well, I actually do. I think Colt McCoy moves better even now.
I think I'm not even sure he's going to be ready to start. But like, there was a period where he ran pretty well. I'm not sure it's today.
I think he probably moves better right now than Jared Goff. He's got to. Yeah, I think so.
How can we test it?
I don't know. Kirk Cousins is up there on the like lack of mobility, but he's a little better, I would say, than Goff. He's at 15, a little low, but... where did you have him, Dan? Mark, rather. Wow. You had him 15th, I had him 13th. Fields is there at 14. Deshaun Watson, who I think we just collectively didn't know what to do with, at 13. And then Stafford at 12. This is a fascinating group. Let's start with Stafford, Mark, because it's funny. I just thought, like, Stafford's been at 12. He's been between 10 and 12 in QB index for most of the last decade. He actually is weirdly one of the most consistent quarterbacks. Like, he had his 2021. He's had other pop-up seasons, but for the most part, that's like where he sets in. So even though he's hurt, or he was hurt, I just like was like, I'm not comfortable putting him any higher than that, but it seems weird, because if he's healthy, I would expect him to be in that area.
Right. And I've had him at 14th and wasn't comfortable putting him any lower. I'm willing to kind of write
off.
Item
12,
Like last year on so many levels, due to an insane string of injuries, an offensive line that was non-functional, I kind of just write it off, because we've been watching Stafford for over a decade plus, and I just feel like I know who he is, and I put him at 14. I'm totally comfortable with that. I guess I find Stafford, you know, and Jordan, I'm sure, you know, you see some of this too, but it's like, the Stafford era is in a strange point right now, because the team has these stars, and then they've just got probably the most amount of young players league wide. And it's like, where is Stafford in this? And I've always just wondered, like, if the trade deadline comes up and someone desperately needed a quarterback, do the Rams move on from him, or is the commitment on both sides all the way in? I feel like last year was really weird with Stafford, and I never felt like I got the full read on what was going on with his injury situation. McVay spoke about it in weird ways. So I don't know. It seems to me like a quarterback in an awkward place.
Yeah, I think he gets an incomplete. He's another one of those incomplete grades. But also, he has such a, you know, body of work to this point. for me, it's like, again, you know, not to sound like a broken record, but like it's the ceiling floor question over and over and over again.
But he's looked good this offseason, right? Or different, would you say?
Yeah. I mean, to me, he like, here's some, I hope this doesn't just like get aggregated out or whatever, but like he looks like himself. Whereas last year he did not, because he wasn't throwing and he was on a pitch count and it was stressful. And he very clearly just like freaking hated not throwing, because probably in previous years, he probably just would have not like said anything about what was
Rodrigue
happening.
Stafford looks like himself, hates throwing. Hated.
Do not aggregate that, people out there in the world.
I don't think you have to worry. I think you're good.
So, but good. I do think that he, I think he does look like, he does look more like the Stafford who came in, you know, other than a slight setback with his thumb in training camp right when he came in. He looks like that guy. The example I use is like, they're obviously onboarding a very young defense. Greg, I think it was very apt, the terminology you used to describe kind of like what the Rams are doing on defense for the sake of keeping an offense that can maybe shoot a bunch of 3-point shots and then just, you know, kind of shield their eyes if something, you know, things go poorly on defense, you just want to try to outscore. There are going to be some bumps along the way, obviously, with that group. But you, in practices, you have to install concepts and you're trying to build confidence and develop a very young group. And so you're encouraging defensive players to make plays. And a lot of times it's happening against, you know, you're especially encouraging the younger guys on the second and third teams to try to really make plays. And yeah, it's spring workouts, so we don't really know anything. But there are times when there will be a sequence of plays that the DBs have made against like the second team or the third team. And Matthew Stafford will just sort of very calmly walk on the field, no expression on his face, and just deal 3-4 touchdowns in a row in red zone drills, and then just walk off the field. And like that was what we saw a lot of in 2021, that sort of like cool, casual, like murder vibes that like we didn't, we saw that. And then you started seeing that over and over and over again as the Rams went on the run that they did. And to me, so to me, I'm like, okay, it's, I don't know specifically what will happen. You have to be concerned, obviously, at his age, with his history, about injuries with any quarterback, especially the one with ones with his injury history, as he's had. And like, he's an incomplete grade from last season as well. But at the same time, like he's more Stafford-y right now than I felt he's been for quite some time. And it's palpable on the field.
Mm. Bring back the murder vibes. I like that. Although him
darkly chaotic Matthew Stafford, I think is what we called it. Darkly chaotic Matthew Stafford.
Like he needs that line to play better as much as any quarterback. Watson, like, just impossible. We've talked Watson, I feel like, a lot this offseason, as just the almost the biggest question mark, X factor, whatever you want to call it, with this season. I wasn't comfortable putting him any higher than I had him 14th. Mark had him 13th. He's just like, how do you judge a guy who's was always a top 7 or 8, I would say, talent player, who came back and last year was truly terrible, didn't get better, didn't look like a fit in that offense, and then measure that with like, okay, the time off, who knows? So he we're just putting him somewhere in between. Fields is kind of like Jalen Hurts, I think, going into last year, where like the running floor is just so high. He hasn't shown as much as Hurts though going into year three as a passer, so we'll see. We don't have him too high. The next tier, let's just put Geno and Tua in a tier. What a world that Geno and Tua, that Geno is 10th on this list and I didn't even have to like cheat to get him higher. We're entering a season where Geno is looked at as the 10th best quarterback in the league.
Both had him at 10. I thought that I didn't know where you were going to go with that one. I think Tua is just
Tua 11th. I'm wrong. And you had him 9th. So you had him ahead.
For Tua, yeah. But for Geno, we both had him at 10. But I think Tua, you're not going to please half the country with whatever you do with Tua. And like, I had him at 9. And I mean, a lot of that is based off of, you know, talk about scheme and all this other business. Like, durability, can he last a season? But he was I thought in many metrics, like a top 6 or 7 guy last year, and in others even higher. And it's just like, do I lean on metrics or the fact that for some lingering reason, and this is just maybe, you know, watching quarterbacks your whole life and football your whole life, it's like, I just don't really trust the Tua experience. I just don't. And I mean, but that's, you know, but watching him play, like, he answered a lot of questions last year. And I think it was like, you know, all off season was like, does he have the arm strength? Does he have that? I mean, with the weapons around him, he looked sensational at times. And I still am just like, the Dolphins themselves spent years kind of looking beyond Tua. I think Mike McDaniel seems to have backed up his own words of faith in him. He could have gone in another direction. And from the jump, he said how much he believed in Tua and milked the most out of him. So it's like quarterback coach combination is about as good as it gets.
Tua should improve. Health is hard to like bake into these rankings. Like if Tua is healthy, I would assume he finishes in the top 10. And yet, if I had to like put money on if Geno or Tua finishes the year in the top 10, I would put it on Geno just because I feel like there's just such a great possibility that Tua is hurt too much to get at the end of the season. But in terms of just his skill set and how he fits and his timing, if he's on the field, I don't have a lot of doubts in Tua. My only doubt is like, okay, where can he keep growing? And can Geno keep growing too? Because look, he hasn't played a lot of football, but man, he throws a pretty ball. Let's go to the next group. We're getting juicy here. Let's go to the back half of the top 10. It's Lamar at 6. It's Aaron Rodgers at 7. We were in perfect agreement. We each had him at 7. It's Trevor Lawrence at 8. It's maybe a slightly lower on our list, I would guess, than some others. And then we have Dak Prescott at 9. Jordan, again, let's say it again. Lamar 6, Rodgers 7, Lawrence 8, Prescott 9. Like which one of those is most surprising or would you have the most problem with? I want you to get mad.
I mean, I don't really. That's the thing is you could make a case for all of that, right? Like it
what
seems
stands out out of those?
Well, what stands out is that it seems logical to me. Mm. I mean, you could obviously argue technicalities and probably personal biases come in via whichever fan base you're a part of. And I would – one thing is I think, you know, so I covered Carolina when Trevor Lawrence was coming up through Clemson and then during the recruiting and all of that stuff. And I just remember how exciting it was that what he could do and how he could transcend. And I think for me, it's like that's one of the things I'm most curious about overall, like in the subject of quarterbacks, is how can you take that next step, you know, locally and in terms of the team, they all know what, or they believe they know what he is capable of. But how do you then take that into, okay, every single year, there's not even a question. You're not even debating this guy's star is transcending and rising into that league-wide face that you kind of really want your franchise quarterback to be. And certainly somebody who's perennial in the top 10, if not the top 6. You really want somebody to consistently put that body of work. And it's hard to judge him because, you know, the last year happened. You know, I don't know what the hell you were going to do with with that situation with Meyer, if you're any player, let alone the quarterback. But I would like to see who he can become, what he can become, because, you know, I've not been around a lot of prospects whose the expectation was quite as high as it was around him when he was playing college football.
I would say one thing with him, like I'm willing to break last season into segments, and his final, you know, 6 regular season games showed such incredible growth. He was immaculate. I have no problem thinking that by the end of the season, he could be locked in as a top 5 type quarterback, because I mean, you're talking about a different type of player, because what do you do with Lamar Jackson? And Aaron Rodgers is arguably, you know, if you look at last year alone and what we've seen most recently, it wasn't as bad as some people thought, but like, is he just Aaron Rodgers? And so we're kind of plugging him into this spot here. Like I struggle with that one a little bit. Of those three, Trevor Lawrence is the most ascendant. And, I think we've just barely even seen what, you know, to your floor ceiling thing. Like my mind goes back to, the primetime game against the Jets, terrible weather, where like he used his legs in a way, he just grew that way as a player. Made incredible decisions and just carried the team on his back. And he's 6'6". He's like the perfect size. Like there's no weakness to his game. And it was essentially his rookie season. So I mean, this is the guy along with Fields that it's like, I don't know where we're going to be at the end of the season. It could be a lot higher than people would think.
Yeah.
I have a spicy take. Is this a safe space for spicy takes?
Let's hear it.
Yeah.
I think, okay, here's the major caveat. Major caveat, right, is if Tua can stay healthy. If Tua can stay healthy, I do think that in the rankings, he rises up and replaces one of these quarterbacks in this tier that you have named.
Oh, sure. I think if Tua stays healthy, he's a decent MVP candidate, like a dark horse MVP candidate, just because the numbers will be undeniable. I'm with you. Lawrence, I just want to see more. You mentioned the end of the season. He can do everything. It just was hard for me to put him ahead of Rodgers and Jackson. You think of like upside. It's like, well, those are, you know, three of the last five MVPs, Rodgers and Jackson. I don't expect Aaron Rodgers to be an MVP again, but I really didn't think his play fell off that much. He needs protection, certainly, but I think that's true of, you know, just about any quarterback. And I just didn't think his play fell off that much. And we've seen their highs. And you could say that about Jalen Hurts, too. But Jalen Hurts, we've seen the progression year two to year three. He has that one extra year than Lawrence. And his highs were, frankly, just way higher than Lawrence's and longer and more sustained. So I didn't think it was unfair. I think a lot of places actually would have Lawrence top five already. We do not have him there. We do have Justin Herbert in the top five. I had him, and this was probably our biggest disagreement, in the top of the list. I think I had him three. I had him over Burrow. You had him lower. And so it ended up averaging out that Herbert ended up fifth overall. Hurts is fourth. Burrow third. Josh Allen number two. And then we each had Patrick Mahomes number one. I'm looking for Herbert. You had him fifth. I had him third. You also had Josh Allen fourth. I had him second. So I don't know, Mark, like out of those two, I'm a little surprised you had Josh Allen as low as fourth.
Well, that's because I had Hurts second. And I just came out of last season convinced that he was just a smidgen behind Mahomes for MVP. And like, to me, just his growth tells me like we just have not seen the final destination. So he won me over as number two. I think Josh Allen is like this unmistakable, incredible, irreplaceable physical specimen that only one team in the league has an option to use. So there's no knock on him. I think with these guys, like, I kind of think that Burrow is just more consistent than Josh Allen. When Josh Allen he had big red zone issues last year. So I want to see what happens with that. But there's no kind of knock on anyone in this top five. I can see why we'd have some variance, but any one of them could wind up as an MVP.
Yeah. I loved Hurts, and I still, going into the season, trying to take everything out of it, would rather have Josh Allen or Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert. And I took Herbert even over Burrow, and that's where it gets tricky. But I just think he can do everything. There's nothing in how he plays that makes me worried about how, like, oh, he hasn't done it in the playoffs. I'm not worried about that. I know how that playoff game went. It was not one of his best games. It wasn't one of Trevor Lawrence's best games either for a while, but it was not one of Justin Herbert's best games. But I'm not worried about that at all. He's shown up in big spots. And so I feel like if I was just drafting a team, I would take Herbert even over Burrow slightly, even though Burrow like comes up with the answers. He's going to be the guy that maybe is ranked slightly too low because he just figures things out throughout his career. But physically, I want Allen and Herbert ahead of him, 2-3. And then I had Hurts 5 because those guys have just done it a little higher and more consistently than him.
But as you know, like that's, I'll tell you one little trick with this assignment last year was like they would tweet out a graphic of your top 10.
Yes.
One of the little trinkets attached to this exercise is that if like Jalen Hurts is injured for 2 weeks, he is not in your top, he's off the list. You have to put his replacement. So that guy invariably is in the 20s or late 20s. And, you know, early on, the graphic would go out without that little part of it being the case. Like even a little line at the bottom, like injured players not shown. And you've got like all of Philadelphia and parts of Pennsylvania flaming you on Twitter for the next 3 days. And it's just like, I just turned off Twitter for like 19 straight months doing this exercise.
I feel like, yeah, the 2022 season took years off Sean McVay's life. I feel like just those responses to your top 10 list, based on how many times Mark has brought it up, took years off your life. But you've got them back this summer, Mark.
I've gained them back.
What have you been doing the last couple of weeks, by the way? You know, what have I been doing? Yeah. Yeah. You went on a sea cruise again, right?
I went to Big Bear, you know, spending time with the kids, just trying to mix it all in together. But some things unreportable, some things reportable.
On you guys' point, like, I just want it on the record saying I want every fan base to be happy.
Right.
Yeah. I want everyone to be happy and successful, right?
Right. Because I used to want that for 31 teams, and the team in Washington, I wouldn't. And now with the changing of the guard, I'm changing my guard too.
I was referring to your Commanders. Your top five.
No, I know.
This is going to be like harshly debated. And
no,
I get it.
I get it. But I'm
it's
saying
so hard
I
to pick.
I agreed. I didn't want people to be angry except for Washington fans, just because of their owner. And now we don't even have to worry about that. I don't think anyone will be too mad about this. Maybe Burrow fans, but he's third overall, even though I had him fourth. So I think everyone would be happy with this.
I don't think that this takes away. I certainly don't mean it to take away from the talent and ability of everybody that you have ranked in various rankings. Between the two of you, I do think that if I'm like an offensive coordinator, head coach, or game planner, whoever, I'm thinking about how if I have a player like Jalen Hurts, nothing is impossible. Like nothing is off the table in terms of what you can try and how you can design your plan. And so obviously we're either deciding we're going to grade quarterbacks in a vacuum or we're deciding we're going to rank quarterbacks as a part to the whole. Either way, if you're looking at that from that lens, for me, it's like I see Jalen Hurts and I think to myself, like, there's no idea that you can't bring to the table in that building because of what he can do and how he presents as a threat in so many different ways. And the multiplicity that he presents, not just as a running quarterback, but as a throwing quarterback, like I'm saying specifically within each category, there's multiplicity in how he can run the football and how he can execute the run game. And there's also multiplicity in how he can throw the football and conceptually how diverse those types of things can get because of his abilities as a passer as well. And you get the sense from him that like he does believe anything is possible for him. So I think when you're like thinking about ideas and game planning, things like that, you know, I honestly, frankly don't know where I would put him. He would certainly be top five for me, but I'm not doing the rankings. You guys are. But I just think like that's something that I always think about when I think about quarterbacks and how you build things around them is like you have a blank canvas and every single marker on the planet in every hue that has ever existed with a player like Jalen Hurts, and you can create things that people can't stop because they probably have not seen them before, or they're throwbacks from an ancient era, or they're pulling from, you know, because you can. And why not? If you can, you should.
Right. And if he could play how he did in the Super Bowl, and he can, we've seen it, like, then he can win the MVP. Then he can be number two. I have a hard time putting anyone above Mahomes ever. Like, Mahomes
too,
is such
yeah.
an obvious one yeah. that we, like, he's. Like people think of him as like not that athletic in a weird way. It's like he's incredibly athletic. Like he's not Jalen Hurts running, but he provides a lot of value running, by the way. And obviously his legs, you know, set up those throws. I guess that's why I would put Hurts below those guys, though, because and it maybe is my old bias, because I think he's one of the greatest running quarterbacks of all time already. Like he was. He's not going to be able to run that much, but he's such a great runner and you can build the run game around him. He didn't show as consistency his ability to get through all of his reads, anticipation, touch, sort of timing on the mid-level throws as consistently as Burrow or Herbert or Allen yet. He was getting there, and he did it in the Super Bowl, which is the biggest spot ever. But he didn't do it the two rounds before. And so those things are so consistent week to week that I guess I'm a little biased and still think like if he shows me that this year, then he's even another level.
Well, also I would just consider his growth process over one season.
Because yes.
you know,
yes.
we're an offseason removed from them flatlining against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and wondering is he essentially on a 1 year tryout to keep this job? And it's like no one in the league grew as much as he did. And I thought he was one of the more interesting players to write about, but week to week, we're like, you know, and we don't even talk about Mahomes that much, but it's like Mahomes, sometimes you just want to be like Patrick Mahomes, of course, number one. But there was a lot of nuance to his game last year where like on an injured lower body, what he did with his feet, mm-hmm. I thought was the biggest growth, one of the biggest areas that he grew because he was just an absolute damage machine on the
it was
ground.
Also literally the defining
times.
Play of the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. And I mean, but that's like, it was like, it's hard to find an area like what's different about Patrick Mahomes this year and the year before. It's like, that was one specific area, but Hurts' growth was in every single aspect of his game. And I don't think that growth is over.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't change you guys' number one. at all, obviously. Like, there's no question.
That's how 2 through 5 clicks,
is
though.
When things get interesting.
That's how you get the clicks, though, if you suddenly swap him out with, you know, fill in the blank dude from the Northeast. Like, people start to go crazy.
Let's put Dak at number one. Where do we have him? 9. He's 30, by the way. That makes me feel old. We're going to be old if this podcast continues any longer. This is a banger. It's a long one.
I should tell you guys, my leg is asleep.
It's one of the longest ones we've ever done. It's fine. We haven't done a show in a long time. We maybe overstuffed the rundown. It's okay. Jordan, you were fantastic. Your series, The Play Callers, is fantastic. We will be back, Mark, next week. A couple shows. Got a Monday show on the books. Dan will be back for that one from New York. We'll still be remote. I'll be back in LA, and we are getting close to training camp. Thank you, Jordan.
Thanks, guys, for having me. Seriously, as you know, huge fan. Really, really appreciate you guys having me on. Just a delight. Thank you.
We will have you on again soon. For Mark Sessler, for Eric Behind the Glass, for Jordan Rodriguez. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.